You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. For the last few months now, at least 17 Republicans and 5 Democrats have been crisscrossing the country, each one making the case that they should be the one to represent their party in the 2016 presidential election. There's plenty more campaigning to come, with the Iowa caucuses still 5 months away.
There's one big problem, says our next guest. The system we use to pick our presidential candidates is broken. He says our system of primaries and caucus convention contests and the lead up to them is no guarantee that the public will end up with the best or the most qualified candidates. He's got some ideas to shake things up.
Joining us now is Jack Johannes. He's a professor of political science at Villanova University and a former professor at Marquette University. He recently explored this issue in an opinion piece for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His new book is called Thinking About Political Reform, How to Fix or Not Fix American Government and Politics. Jack, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
So we're well into the campaign season, and yet there's still an awful lot of campaign to come. You sound at this point pretty early in that you're frustrated. Is that fair to say?
At the very least, yeah. The system is inefficient. I think it's ineffective. I don't think it enhances accountability, and it certainly doesn't do much to help us guarantee or at least have a good probability of electing good candidates.
And yet it has been this way for a long time. It's a part of American politics. Why should we uproot all this and try something new?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. One is the biggest reason, in my judgment, is that we don't have any kind of peer review. That is to say, the candidates are vetted by the electorate, or at least portions of the electorate, rather than by people who are really competent and involved in the process of governing. The cost of this system is outrageous. We're going to spend at least $1 billion on the nomination process this year. The time and energy it takes, the fact that people running for the presidency are divorced from people running from Congress at the same time, the system as it is allows, it almost inclines us towards a period of fascination with extremist candidates or candidates who are clearly out of the mainstream. Participation rates are very low. I mean, if we're interested in public participation, we don't get much unlike what we would like. You've got closed primaries, which limit the selection process to a small number of partisans. It's all front-loaded. It's loaded up towards the front, which puts a tremendous advantage on funding and on media coverage. It gives a big, huge advantage to the early states. It enhances the role of the media, which not only tends to prescribe who should be winning and what the percentages they should get. The process has nothing to do at all with one's governing skills. So the bottom line is that we're getting a process which chooses candidates for us to vote in November, and the process really has nothing to do with the governing process.
Well, let's drill down to one of those that you mentioned there, and that is that the way primaries and caucuses are set up, it excludes a sizable group of likely voters. I think you say something like two-fifths of voters. How does that end up happening?
Well, there's two things that go on. First of all, a number of states, I think it's 11 states currently, they have rigorously closed primaries. There's another 30 states that have sort of closed, sort of open primaries or caucuses. So in a number of states, therefore, that the only people who can participate are those who identify with the party. Now, one can make a very good argument for that. But what that does is clearly excludes a number of people from the possibility of participating in selecting the nominees. On the other side, you've got a front loaded process, which, except for 2008, which was an aberration, tends to reach a decision quickly by March or April as to who the party's nominees will be. And yet the primaries, the opportunity for people to participate extends, theoretically at least, into June. But those latter primaries and caucuses have no meaning because we already know by March who's going to get the nomination. So the participation rate in the nominating primaries nationally runs, you know, in a 20% range, 25% range. That's far from what is ideal.
And you also say, because of who gets to be involved in these elections and caucuses, that it skews toward people voting who are activists, and therefore the issues move either to the far left or the far right.
That is generally true. It's probably not quite as true as popular mythology would have it, but it is clear. I mean, if you look at Iowa, for example, the first caucus, or New Hampshire, the first primary, The people who participate in those caucuses and primaries are to the outside of the mainstream of their parties. Perhaps not radically outside, but outside enough. So those, and again, you know, in 12 of the last 14 presidential elections, if you don't win either Iowa or New Hampshire in the primary process, you're not going to be president of the United States. So what we're doing is we're loading up these early primaries with the authority, in effect, not to dictate, but certainly to influence who our eventual president's going to be. And those states, arguably, are not all that typical.
We're talking right now with political scientist Jack Johannes. He says the presidential nomination process in this country is in need of reform, and he's got some suggestions for us for making some meaningful changes. And Jack, one question for you. You've made the case that the process is cumbersome, that is, it's expensive, that it's exclusive to a certain extent. But does it work? Does it offer up candidates who do the job and can do the job well?
Well, I think each of us has to make that judgment on our own. But if you just look at the list of people who've been involved in this process, and perhaps that's one of the problems with the process, it tends to bring in marginal candidates. Michelle Bachmann, John Huntsman, Tim Pawlenty, Tommy Thompson of Wisconsin, of course. You got people like Elizabeth Dole, Dan Quayle, Douglas Wilder, Paul Tsongas. Most of these names none of us would recognize. Dennis Kuczynski, Carol Moseley Brown. These are all people who've been in the presidential, either the primary system, the season, or what we call the invisible primary, which is the year before the primary. There's a lot of unknowns and unqualified people, unqualified meaning they don't have the requisite experience, who are in this process and who sort of muck it up. And yet they oftentimes can appeal to people on emotional grounds. I mean, if you look at Donald Trump today, or Ben Carson, or Carly Fiorina, probably nice people, but they have absolutely zero governing experience. Now, how many of us would go to a dentist who has never filled a tooth, or go to an accountant who's never filled out a tax form? So this process encourages that kind of candidate. And with the current funding system we have, with the super PACs and so on, those kind of candidates not only can be funded, but they can stay in the process a much longer time than they used to be able to.
Well, let's
so all of that leads to, I think, a disastrous result.
I want to get into your proposed solutions now. You say that each party should establish a genuinely deliberative nominating convention, and it's going to have, of the composition, some of the party's most important stakeholders, including maybe former presidents, people from Congress that they'd actually be working with. Tell us more about your idea.
All right. It's a question of what we value in the process. If we value participation, then obviously a primary, massive national primary or something like that would be the way to go. If, on the other hand, we want a process that chooses candidates who are most likely to be able to govern, and who in the process of selection have established linkages to the people with whom they have to govern, then we should look for something radically different. And my proposal is to go back to the way they did it in the 1780s. Let's get the members of a given party, let's say Democrats, in the House, the Senate, and the governor's mansions, maybe former Democratic presidents, maybe Democratic state party chairman. Let them pick the best Democrat to run in November for our approval, and the same thing on the Republican side. Now, that is going to it means we don't have that direct participation, but what we have is a peer review process which is calculated towards success, successful governance, and it would link members of Congress and the governors to this candidate. And I think in the long run, that would be a much better thing for the country, and it would probably give us better choices in November as well.
Now, aren't you concerned, though, about cutting out the people altogether, the electorate, the voiceless, the people who are the stakeholders in how the country's governed?
Well, yes, I am concerned. On the one hand, they would have the ultimate say in November, clearly. Secondly, you know, I the more I study the history of American politics, the more I'm fascinated by the way it was done back then. So, you know, the framers built the Constitution not as a participatory democratic system, but as a republic, a limited or moderated participation. James Madison in Federalist 10, I think, has this wonderful statement that if the public passes its views and its wishes through appropriately chosen representatives, the likely result is going to be better for the public than if the public could have chosen the policies themselves. Now, one can argue that case, but the idea here is that there are some people in this country who are simply more competent to make those judgments about who's going to be a good president than are other people. And let's face it, most of the voters don't pay much attention. They don't really get interested into this thing until late in the game, maybe a couple of weeks or 3 weeks before they go to vote, or they participate in a caucus, and they're very susceptible. The public is, I think, very susceptible to emotional appeals. And you see that especially in the early parts of the primary process. We're seeing it now. We'll see it up through the first three or four primaries in next year. So it doesn't bother me that the public would be eliminated directly from the process. They would have the ultimate say, which is what the public should do, but they would have the ultimate say in choosing candidates who I think would be better candidates and better potential presidents.
We're talking with political scientist Jack Johannes. He says the presidential nomination process in the country needs reform, and he's offering up some suggestions for changing it.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think our current nomination system is working for the United States, or could it use some tweaks or an overhaul? If so, what would change look like to you? How do you see it being better for the country? What do you think of the idea our guest just laid out? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking right now with political scientist Jack Johannes from Villanova University. He says our presidential nomination process, the primaries, the caucuses, the system needs reform, he says. He's giving us some ideas on what a change could look like.
And you can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the way that we choose and nominate presidential candidates in this country? Do you think it's fair to voters? Does it usually offer up the best candidates? Do you think it's even possible to try to reform the process at this point? And what would it look like, your vision? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And one question, Jack, is let's say that there was widespread interest in this. People were buying into it, wanting to make a change. How would you ever transition from the system we've got going now to one like you describe?
Well, first of all, I don't think there will be widespread support for it, but supposing there were. Remember, the nominating process is a function of the two national political parties. They can dictate however they want it. Now, they do get involved with state laws, state legislative decisions, when it comes to timing and nature of state primaries. But if the parties chose, they could simply say, no more primaries, no more state caucuses. We're going to do this the way I'm suggesting. That is easily doable technically. The parties control their own destiny. They don't need to have any constitutional amendment or legislation passed. So it would not be hard to do that way. The difficulty, of course, is that most people simply think this would be crazy, it's undemocratic, it's elitist, and so on. And, you know, of course, to some extent, that's true. It's just a question of what people value. Do you value mass participation in the process, or would we prefer some more, what I would think would be more effective and more highly qualified candidates who have passed the peer review of the people with whom they have to govern?
Now, I'm curious about one of the things that we've seen in this race so far. Particularly, I think it's happening because of the number of candidates on the GOP side of the field, and that is candidates portraying themselves as the best person to take on the front runner of the other party, in this case, Hillary Clinton, instead of why they themselves and their policies would be best for the country. Would this plan take care of that kind of thing?
I don't know if it would solve that problem, because politics at the presidential level in November is always about if there is an incumbent, I would be better than the incumbent, or certainly be better than the opponent. It wouldn't do anything to that, but I think you would wind up getting candidates who are more moderate and who have track records that could be discussed in presidential debates and through the media and so on. Because you would be getting, we wouldn't be diverted by marginal candidates who we know are not going to be a nominee. I mean, if you go back to 2012, Michelle Bachmann or Newt Gingrich or Herman Cain, we know they weren't going to be nominated. But yet they took up so much of the time, so much of the attention, which then diverts us from what we would like to be focused on, are the leading candidates, so we can understand where they stand and what the issues are and what their track record is.
Now, you said earlier that another side effect you see of the nomination process, which you're not happy with, is that there is a built-in fascination with extreme candidates, and that the model that you're putting out there would give more moderate candidates. Well, isn't that fascination that we see part of the electoral process, a part of the will of the people? And if we're seeing it, it's because people are interested in it, and therefore it should have a voice and a presence in the process.
You're absolutely correct. This is what people are fascinated with. People tend in this stage of the process. It'll change in November next year, but at this stage of the process, people are thinking more with their emotions. They love to hear a candidate say things that they feel deep in their guts. All right, but on sober reflection, they'll probably understand that those policies are not going to work, or they're not going to happen, or they're not good for the country. So what we see through this whole process now is we are spending so much time and so much money and so much media attention on political statements which probably don't make a lot of sense. I mean, when Donald Trump, and I don't want to pick on him, when he says, I'm going to build a wall that Mexico's going to pay for, no one in his right mind thinks that's true, but we all feel good about it. When Hillary Clinton says, I'm going to make sure that students can go through college without massive debts, we all feel good about that. But the reality is those are not going to happen. They're not options. So I would rather have a system where we dealt with candidates who were realistic and who had to be realistic because they were the ones chosen by their peers. Who could present more realistic options to us. We could then make a more intelligent choice in the November election than perhaps we have been making.
We're talking with Jack Johannes right now, professor of political science at Villanova University. We're talking about his ideas for reforming the presidential nomination process. And one concern, as we look at your ideas, Jack, to have a sort of a peer review process to nominate the best candidates instead of the Electoral College, one problem that could happen is that you get more entrenched politics. You get more of the same instead of getting those fresh voices in and the same power trends continuing on for a long time, more political dynasties.
Well, on the one hand, there's something to be said for political stability, but the reality is if you look at the turnover rates in the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House, and these are the people who would do the nominating, turnover rates over the last two decades or so have been pretty substantial. We're turning over 20-25% of the House and Senate almost every election. So you're not getting a permanent dynasty of Congress people who would then choose their favorite presidential candidate. And even if they were, I would think, at least I would argue, that it's better to have them pick a president with whom they know they can work to get things done rather than for the voters to nominate candidates for the November election who may or may not be able to work with these people, the congressmen, the senators, the governors.
We have a comment here from Tyler on Facebook who says, I'd be interested in discussing it. Getting money out of politics would be great if that's what he means, and abolishing the Electoral College, even though it does serve a purpose. But you have to be very careful when talking about this stuff. Keeping the powers balanced is tough work, I'd imagine.
It is. Well, first of all, the Electoral College has nothing to do with the nomination process. That's the way we actually count the votes that are cast in November. So that's a separate issue entirely. But the money is not trivial. What's happening, first of all, we are spending, I mean, you remember we spent $6 billion on the entire presidential election process, or the entire election process 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago. We're going to spend $1 billion on this nomination process, not the general election, just the nomination process. Where's that money coming from? And that raises all the questions that your Facebook person has raised. But with all the invention or the development of the super PACs, which the Supreme Court has sanctioned. It is a lot easier for very marginal candidates who appeal to relatively small groups of people who have a lot of money to stay in these nomination contests. So I think it is quite possible that the selection through the primaries and the caucuses, which will begin in January, will extend a lot longer than they have been extending. There'll be more candidates, and they're saying perhaps more unreasonable things, but being well-funded. So I think we've got an intersection here of a new campaign finance system, which has developed over the last 4 or 5 years, that now intersects with the nominating process, and I would argue not to the benefit of the country.
Jack, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Jack Johannes, professor of political science at Villanova University, talking about reforming the presidential nominating process.